So you've heard the expression to have the wind at your back. That's what we want in life, right? Things to be blowing and going our way, to have direction and to have momentum in that direction. Especially when you are a person of God and you think and you understand that God is your God, that He has made promises to you, that He is starting to bless you and help you and even fulfill those promises. There's nothing like that regarding having the wind at your back. And in the early days of Jacob being in Haran, in the Paddan Aram area, that's exactly his experience. So in our focus this year on the narratives of the Old Testament, we are involved in this saga of the life of Jacob, and we're taking our time to, and we can even go slower in this, looking at Jacob's life. We're going to do about 7 or 8 lessons in this, but, you know, it's just remarkable what's happening with this man. So let's have a little review, because it's been a couple of weeks. We see it at the very beginning. He's a man of destiny. When he's in the womb, God speaks to his mother and says that he, being the younger, would rule over the older. God has some great things in store for Jacob. However, it's a very complicated family because there's favoritism. Jacob is favored by his mother, Rebekah. Esau, his older brother, is his twin older brother, is favored by his father, Isaac. And it's not a good favoritism. It leads to tension in the family. Jacob appears to have the understanding of being the leader of the family one day, the position of birthright, and having the blessing that was coming through his ancestors, Abraham, and his father, Isaac, coming from God, that was a wonderful thing to have. He values those things. However, his approach in trying to acquire those things, it was corrupt. And so that's when the deception took place. That was the idea of his mother, Rebekah, because she wanted her son to have the favored position and have the blessing. And then Jacob himself is party to this, where they deceive his father in receiving the blessing and supplanting the role of Esau in the family. Isaac was greatly disturbed by this. Esau is enraged by it. Jacob and Rebekah get their way. Jacob gets the blessing. However, it didn't work out so great, because instead of stepping into the role eventually of his father Isaac in the family and sort of slowly migrating into that position, he can't stay there. Because of Esau's threat of his life, Jacob has to flee with nothing but a bag and a staff. He's got nothing, and his prospects are uncertain. Until, as he's migrating in the northern part of Canaan, he has a vision through a dream one night where God speaks to him and promises to protect him and bless him and help him. And Jacob, we've talked about this in the class, I think legitimately makes a sincere promise to God to follow after him and to be his man. And we'll see that in the coming weeks. And so even though he's an empty-handed fugitive, now he's got everything. The important thing, God in his life. And when he gets to Haran, he is welcomed with open arms by his uncle, Rebekah's brother, Laban. And he is accepted into this family. And he develops a strong love for the second daughter, Rachel. She has an older, less attractive sister, Leah, but it's Rachel that Jacob desires. And so as he starts to work for Laban, he asks for her hand, and the price he would bring would be 7 years of labor for Rachel. And that's where we left off. Everything seems to be falling in place for Jacob. He is welcomed by this family in Haran. He's got a place among them. He's going to receive this woman that he loves so much. His circumstances are just falling together. But here's the thing about that. Circumstances are not as important to God as our character is. Oftentimes we are fixated on our circumstances and less so about our character. See, to develop character, we've got to be taught certain lessons. And sometimes some people have to learn the hard way. And evidently Jacob was one of those. So turn with me to Genesis chapter 29, and we will see the education of Jacob begin. In Genesis chapter 29, verse 21, he has served his 7 years for Rachel. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife, that I may go into her, for my time is completed." So Laban gathered together all the people of the place and made a feast. But in the evening, he took his daughter Leah. He took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. Laban gave his female servant Zilpah to his daughter Leah to be her servant. And in the morning, behold, it was Leah. Now, I know what you're asking. How in the world did this happen? Well, we dabbled in this in the class this morning. Eastern weddings were male-dominated affairs, and it was the focus that was upon the male, okay? It's the opposite in Western weddings. It's the bride. There would have been a processional, finally, with the bride being brought to the male at his house and all those who had gathered there. And, of course, this was Laban's camp because this is not Jacob's home of origin. And there would be a great feast there. And when the bride is brought, she is veiled. She is covered. And then escorted into the groom's tent. This was at night and no electrical lights. And so this would have been a dim affair. And here's the thing about that. Jacob would have never expected this. I mean, after all, Laban has put on a big celebration. He has kept his word that if you work for me 7 years, I'll give you my daughter. It appears that Laban is meeting, you know, holding up his end of the bargain. And of course, you can see here by the statement made in verse 21, Jacob is anxious for this wife. And evidently, Leah played it just right. It was obviously the father's plan, the parents' plan. But the daughter, the child, grown child, played it just right. And the marriage was consummated, but with the wrong woman. Does this sound familiar? First of all, a parent has a plan to use a child to deceive someone to get what he wants. It's just like Rebecca worked through Jacob to get what she wanted. There is the switching of the younger for the older. In this case, the older took the place of the younger. Remember how, in the case of Jacob and Esau, the younger took the place of the older. I mean, after all, whoever thought of letting the younger get ahead of the older anyway? That's just not how it's done. And there is a deception that is pulled off because of impaired vision. Those who lived at this time and those who read this even centuries later would have some understanding of how this went. We have to explain it. We have to remind ourselves that in ancient times, once night fell, everything was dim, even if you had lamps burning oil. And there is a covering of the face until they go into the bedchamber. There is impaired vision, and there is deceit pulled off, just like Isaac had impairment in his eyes when Rebekah and Jacob fooled him. Well, there it is. The bell has rung. School has started for Jacob. He has run headfirst into a buzzsaw, his uncle Laban. Because when it comes to shenanigans and trickery, Jacob's met his match. Laban is just as, if not better, at it. So what happens now? Well, the marriage was consummated. There's no going back, only going forward. In verse 25, "And in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And Jacob said to Laban," now, you know, I have a while ago, you know, "Good morning, honey." Honey. Okay, so what would Jacob have said to Leah in the light of day? There's a lot of interesting conversations we're not privy to. But he goes right to Laban. And he confronts him. "What is this you have done to me?" Jacob knew exactly what's going on. Who is behind this? "Did I not serve you for Rachel? Why then have you deceived me?" You see what Jacob is saying? "I've done what I was supposed to do. You've not done what you were supposed to do. You've deceived me." Laban said, "It is not so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also in return for serving me another 7 years. Jacob did so and completed her week. Then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. And Laban gave his female servant Bilhah to his daughter Rachel to be her servant. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and served Laban for another 7 years. Did you note this indignation that Jacob had here? "Hey, I've done what was right. You've deceived me." It's a reasonable indignation here. Doesn't that remind us a little bit of Esau's indignation? When Esau comes into the tent with the game that he has prepared, and he finds out that his brother has deceived his father and taken his place, and Esau is outraged. So is Jacob here. And they both had a legitimate beef. This time it's Jacob who's been cheated. He knew what it felt like to be a cheater. Now he knows what it feels like to be cheated. And the real sting in this incident is what Laban says in verse 26. "It is not so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn." See, the firstborn, Laban says, has certain rights. And that's a true statement. It's one that Jacob didn't appreciate before, that the older should have certain rights. And now he feels the consequences of the way things ought to be done. And just as when Isaac blessed Esau and he told his son, "I have blessed him and he'll be blessed," he couldn't reverse that process. He's consummated this relationship with Leah. There's no going back. However, Laban makes him an offer. Do you think this is the first time Laban thought of this offer? Like, "Oh, I'm sorry I've upset you. Let's see what we can do." That's not how Laban operates. He's slippery. And he makes him an offer that he knows Jacob will take. And that is, "Have Leah as your wife for a week, and then we'll add Rachel also after a week, but you got to serve me 7 more years. Laban has worked this thing from an angle to get 14 years of service out of Jacob in his flocks and herds. 14 years of service. He had doubled it. Instead of just 7 years for Rachel, he gets 14 out of him. And he's able to scoot out Leah, who evidently was not an attractive option for people. And look at Jacob's family from the onset here. He's now got two wives. He's got rival wives. We'll see that surface shortly. He's got one wife favored over the other. Favoritism and rivalry. Trouble is coming. It always does when there's favoritism and rivalry. It's being repeated now in his own family. And what about Leah? In verse 31, when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, let's understand that. It's the idea that he favored Rachel and would have had probably a natural resentment toward Leah who was forced on him. We're told that the Lord opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, because the Lord has looked upon my affliction, for now my husband will love me. She conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am hated, he has given me this son also. She called his name Simeon. Again she conceived and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will be attached to me because I've borne him three sons. Therefore his name was called Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, this time I will praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah. And she ceased bearing. What begins here is a very interesting narrative about Jacob and his wives and the children that came from them, but also a genealogy. These first four sons, you recognize their names. These are going to be the children of Jacob, whose name will be called Israel, and they will produce these 12 sons that will come, the 12 tribes of Israel. And note that the naming of the sons indicated Leah's circumstance and her trouble and how she felt. These are word plays on the names. It's something like a family moves to a new country and they name a child Mark because it marks a new time in their lives. It's a play on the name. So the first four sons, Reuben, which means to see. She's hoping now that her husband will see that the Lord has given them a son and will love her. Oh, her desire to have Jacob's affections. The next one's called Simeon. The Lord has heard me. Because she was not favored by her husband, she realizes the Lord is hearing her. The next one is called Levi. Possibly, now Jacob will be attached to me. It means to join, Levi does. Now, after this third son, my husband will be attached to me. And then there's Judah, which means to praise the Lord. I want you to note something. There's a shift here. Before, it was about her relationship with Jacob, or possibly what the Lord was doing and how that could affect the relationship with Jacob. There's an embedded message in this. Where is Leah's attention now? To the Lord. After four children, she can't get Jacob's affections. To whom does she look? We keep turning to things, and we keep turning to people for fulfillment and affirmation. It's a dead end. There's only one place to look for truly deep and lasting fulfillment and affirmation. It's to God. Well, look what happens next. As if this thing is not complicated enough. In chapter 30, excuse me. Starting in verse 1. When Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she envied her sister. She said to Jacob, "Give me children or I shall die." Okay, let's just stop right there. Jacob's able to give children. He's already produced four sons. Can we say that she's irrational? Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel. So far in the biblical text, what has been said about Jacob's disposition toward Rachel? He loved her. Things are not so hunky-dory anymore. And he said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" Then she said, "Here's my servant Bilhah. Go into her so that she may give birth on my behalf, that even I may have children through her." So she gave him her servant Bilhah as a wife, and Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, "God has judged me and has also heard my voice and given me a son." Do you see how focused she is on self? Therefore, she called his name Dan. Rachel's servant Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel said, "With mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister and have prevailed." So she called his name Naphtali. Whew. We've talked about this in the class on Sunday morning. Having children, especially having a son, was a prime thing, especially to mothers. It appears, certainly in the Genesis culture, as well as outside the Genesis culture in ancient history, that producing a male gave you your worth as a mother. And when you couldn't bear children, this appears to be the alternative. We cited this fact in the class this morning, that there are records outside the biblical account of ancient people giving a concubine to their husband when they couldn't bear children. It's not God's way. And that's why you see everything becoming a mess because of it. It's fraught with moral and domestic problems, which will ensue. And look how Rachel is both jealous of Leah and just enraged, making this demand on Jacob, "Give me a child or I'll die." And then Jacob, in turn, becomes angry with her because he's frustrated. What can he do in this situation? And this is when she makes a statement that is reminiscent of her mother-in-law. "She must have a child or she would die." Last time we heard something like that, it was Rebekah. Recall Genesis 27. This is after Jacob has deceived and gotten the blessing from the father, and she's disturbed about the wives of Esau. In 27:46, Rebekah said to Isaac, "I loathe my life. I loathe my life because of the Hittite women. If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women of the land, what good will my life be to me?" Very similar to Rachel saying, "If I don't have a child, I'll die." I'm going to repeat a point I made 2 weeks ago with a little nuance. Do not tie as a parent, especially if you're a mother. This may not be the Mother's Day message that some people expected today. But you want to look at Rebekah and Rachel as a mother, and you want to run the opposite way. Do not tie as a parent, mother or father, your life, your happiness, your contentment, in your fulfillment to what happens with your children. You can be a dedicated parent who unselfishly loves your children and serves your children, and you do right by your children. But children are to be raised to leave father and mother, Genesis chapter 2. Has nothing to do with mileage. Has to do with relationships. The goal is to raise them to be independent. That's the Bible. That's Genesis chapter 2. One of the first things we learn. Grown children and parents are to have their own lives. And when a mother or father ties their life to grown children, look at the book of Genesis. There is dysfunction and there is damage. And this is typically what will happen. Either the children will be pulled so close that they cannot function independently and they are crippled in their life because of an overdependence. Or the child will become of age and will resent the control and the smothering, and the child will be driven away. What happened to Jacob and Rebekah's relationship because of her control and conniving? It resulted in Jacob being driven away. And we made the point 2 weeks ago, Rebekah is never mentioned again when Jacob comes back to Canaan. The implication is she's gone after 20 years. So out of desperation, Rachel pursued a plan just like Sarah's. She takes an emotion out of the page of Rebekah, and now she takes a plan, an action out of the page of Sarah. And she gave Bilhah, the servant, to Jacob to produce children for her. And she does. And she names the first one Dan, which means to judge. And she said, see, God's judged my case. You see, she's got a righteous indignation that she deserves children and she's been wronged. And then she says, look at this. She names the second one Naphtali, which means mighty struggle. And she says it. She said she struggled with her sister and prevailed. Now, I don't know if you've been counting. Leah's up 4-2. I don't know how she's getting this. Because really, that's sort of silly to count the children. But that's about the way they're thinking. But of course, she's got an ace in the hole. She's got not only two children, but she's got Jacob. And his affections toward her. So that's what this is about? Getting the best of your sister? Who has the upper hand here? But why would I act this way and saying it this way, this point? Because isn't that repeated in family after family after family after family? People trying to get one up on somebody else. Well, my husband got this job. We just moved into this new house. Or to your sibling, well, my son now has this promotion. I mean, happens all the time. And then, here we go again, as if it couldn't get more complicated, Leah ceased to bear children. Starting in verse 9. When Leah saw that she had ceased bearing children, she took her servant Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as wife. Then Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a son, and Leah said, good fortune has come. So she called his name Gad. Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a second son, and Leah said, happy am I, for women have called me happy. So she called his name Asher. Leah just keeps producing until she couldn't or didn't, but she's not going to stop at 4. She wants more. So she gives Zilpah to Jacob. It's good to know the themes that we're seeing in Jacob's family, in Jacob's story. Started with his family of origin and now with his family up in Haran. Barrenness, struggle, and rivalry. Over and over. Okay, you know what I'm going to say next. As if it couldn't be a bigger mess than it is, we come to chapter 30, verse 14. In the days when wheat harvest, Reuben went and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. Have we heard an expression like that before? There's food and somebody says, please give me some of that. Esau. Verse 15, but she said to her, is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also? Now, look how this is seen. Rachel says, you've taken away my husband. Well, originally, Rachel was supposed to be given to Jacob. It was only by deceit that Leah became his wife. But Leah is owning him, you see. Rachel said, then he may lie with you tonight in exchange for your son's mandrakes. And when Jacob came from the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come in to me, for I have hired you with my son's mandrakes. So he lay with her that night. And God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Leah said, God has given me my wages because I gave my servant to my husband. So she called his name Issachar. Well, a transaction. Husband for mandrakes. Mandrakes, most Bible scholars say, that at this time were thought to be an enhancer to fertility. Probably no science behind that. This incident shows Rachel's hold over Jacob. She wants some food, so she's going to deal him out. It shows Leah's longing to have a husband, to have his affection, and to keep producing children. Does this look familiar? In exchange of food for something of greater value. In the open transaction, there's no secret deal here. I'll give you this for that. But this time, instead of Jacob pulling off the deal and getting the advantage over his brother, he is the commodity in a deal where one sister deals him for the other. He's got a different seat for this activity. He's got a different position to view this. What a mess. And this is what envy, rivalry, selfish desires, selfish ambitions, deceit, and manipulation produces. Don't operate by those things in your family. And even though, as we have seen in the cases of these people, one may think they are justified in operating that way, you're not, and it's not worth it. And so there's the naming of two sons, Issachar, which means wages are higher. How would you like to have that name that indicates that your mother made a deal for mandrakes for your father to produce you through her? And then Zebulun, which means honor. She hadn't been endowed with so many sons, and she just thought she would be now favored. Verse 19, and Leah again conceived and bore Jacob a sixth son. And there's Zebulun. God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will honor me because I've borne him six sons. So she called his name Zebulun. And afterwards she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. Leah thinks she's got the superior role now. And she's been vindicated. But look how all this went down. And look especially at what happens to Jacob. By Laban, he'd been deceived by a switch. By the wives, he's been traded like he's a commodity. How had Jacob viewed his family before, in particular his brother and his father? He had treated them as commodities to be manipulated, even if he had to deceive them to get his own, to meet his own ambitions. Let's consider two statements from the New Testament. One in Matthew chapter 7. And let us understand, folks, that this is a general principle, but it's a true one. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 7, verse 2, for with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. And then there's the statement even more fitting in Galatians chapter 6. At the end of the Galatians letter in chapter 6, Paul writes in verse 7, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever one sows, that will he also reap." We would say what goes around comes around. God has an ironic and fitting way of teaching us the painful lessons we need to learn. It's very clear from how these incidents go down that God is operating that way to bring to Jacob's attention what he had done. There's another birth. And right when Leah thought she had the ultimate advantage, this happens in Genesis 30 and in verse 22. "Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. She conceived and bore a son and said, 'God has taken away my reproach.' And she called his name Joseph, saying, 'May the Lord add to me another son.'" The fact that Rachel said that God had taken away her reproach indicates how she viewed her infertility as some kind of curse. There's no indication in the book of Genesis, in spite of Sarah's barrenness for many years, in spite of Rebecca's barrenness for many years, that they were being cursed. Their value system is askew. And so she names this belated son Joseph, which means add. But it's interesting. This term add in the Hebrew language is similar to the way the expression to be taken away sounds. Add or taken away sound very familiar in the Hebrew. And look what Rachel thinks of immediately. Immediately, she thought of having another son. She believes now some impasse has been broken, and now she's going to be fruitful just like her sister. And now, as if one longed-for child was not enough, she wants more. Listen. Take the blessing. If God's blessed you, take it. Get down on your knees and thank Him for it. And don't get greedy. Don't order off the menu. Just open up your heart and your mind and your hands and say, "Lord, what would you give me?" And be grateful for it. You know the old saying, be careful what you wish for? She'll have another son, all right. She won't live to raise him. He will grow up motherless. But Jacob loved her so much, and she'd been barren so long, and they finally have a son, Rachel and Jacob. How special this child must have been to Jacob. How favored he would be. And we've already seen more than once what that leads to. And it will again with even more intensity. You thought the rivalry between Jacob and Esau was bad. You thought the rivalry between Leah and Rachel was bad. I'm going to be non-grammatically correct here. You ain't seen nothing yet. But back to our two main characters, Jacob and God. The many ironic twists and turns that God... that shows up here in this narrative shows that God is is dealing with Jacob in the same way that he'd been dealing with other people. But remember God's promise to Jacob. At Bethel, when Jacob had nothing and he was a fugitive, God promised to bless him and take care of him. We have to conclude that all of this was part of God's way of blessing Jacob. Because though his circumstances are troubling at times, what's happening with his character? We'll see evidence of that. What would be the outcome here? Is he learning what he needs to learn? See, we don't want him. But from time to time, we all need a Laban in our lives. It's like sandpaper. Sandpaper's rough. But what does it do? It smooths us out. Some people are sandpaper. They're rough on us. But if we respond accordingly, it will soothe us, smooth us out. Some people will get you in hot water. But what hot water gets you clean? Alan Ross wrote this in his commentary on Genesis, and it's worth quoting. If we use the story of Jacob as a sample, we may say that when we are thrown together with people who are crafty, arrogant, deceitful, contentious, gossipy, or a host of other human frailties, before we lament that we have to be around such people, we perhaps should take a long look at ourselves. It may be that some of those traits characterize us, and that other people may be part of God's means of disciplining us. When we see the flaws, even the sinfulness of other people, it's good to ask ourselves the question, am I looking in the mirror here? What do I see about myself? And what do I need to do about it? Did Jacob see himself in Laban, and was he repulsed by it? And did he learn to do things differently? Well, Lord willing, in 2 weeks, we'll see. Brother Dave has another song for us to sing together. And if there's a soul here ready to commit their way to Christ by obedience to the gospel, then we would love to assist you in that as we stand and sing.